Welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan. With me today, Kieran Deal. Dressed like a pirate.
I'm the only one who came dressed.
And Megan Gailey.
I'm dressed for tomorrow.
Yeah.
When this comes out.
It comes out on not Halloween.
Yeah. Which is, I'm dressed
that.
November festive.
Oh, yeah. You guys are dressed. They're dressed. Actually, the irony is you both look incredibly chic. And I'm just dressed like a... I have an eye patch around my...
Oh, you do?
Around my neck. I really went for this.
Choker.
Listen, I got an email, guys.
This week, Megan Gailey and Kieran Deal join me to discuss why paying women to lie about Robert Mueller is a real dumb idea. And we talk about Kavanaugh's triumphant Georgetown prep homecoming and why the blue wave still depends on you. Then we talk to Oregon Governor Kate Brown about her close re-election fight and why it should matter to the rest of the country. And then actor and activist Amber Heard joins us in studio to talk about safety work that women do. And it wouldn't be an episode of Hysteria without The Hills We'll Die On.
Erin
and
I,
like an asshole.
Are dressed like we're meeting our boyfriend's parents.
We are.
That's the costume we're in. Good girlfriend.
High neck.
Yes.
Mine ties. But anyway.
You guys are in a costume I would call so pretty.
Thank you.
Thank
so pretty.
You.
Yeah.
Thank
so pretty.
I blew dry the front of my hair.
Wow.
Yeah. And the back is sopping wet.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. Let's get into a little bit of housekeeping before we dive into the news from this week. Housekeeping. I'm guest hosting Love It or Leave It Again this week. So you can hear that episode Saturday. If you don't like listening to female voices, you should not listen to that. I mean, it's always half women anyway, so you should just not listen to it if you hate listening to women talk. But if you do, I'm guest hosting. Also, Election Day is Tuesday. You can see it. We can see it. It's
wow.
So close.
AKA Crooked Christmas.
Oh, it's like some kind of combination of like Christmas and
New Year's
the
Eve.
The Nightmare Before Christmas.
And finals. It's like Christmas and finals combined
yeah.
into one
Christmas
thing.
Christmas and the Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah. We don't know what year will be.
Oh, man.
Blue Wave? Blue Grave?
But it is here. Oh, it does
you
have a,
folks.
It does have a
you.
Finals because it's like, well, we've done all the preparation we can and we might fail.
Yeah, now we got to stay up for 24 hours and record another episode of Hysteria.
I'm going to be flying on Tuesday.
Oh,
cross country.
Man. Well, good for you. You can miss some of it.
Yeah, I think I will.
Yeah. First news item today. Did you guys hear this like bonkers story that broke earlier this week about a plot against Robert Mueller? Arranged and organized by the most inept henchman of all time, basically.
It's like House of Cards gone wrong in real life. It's like it wasn't supposed to be a sitcom, guys.
It wasn't House of Cards. It's just 52 pickup. They just threw all the cards on the ground. It was never even a house. So in case you're not familiar, basically the FBI is now looking into an alleged plot to pay women to concoct false sexual assault claims against Special Counsel Robert Mueller. This is bonkers. Like I said, on October 17th, journalists started getting emails from a woman named Lorraine, who says that she'd been offered $20,000 by a man who alleged to be working for a company called Surefire Intelligence, which is a stupid name. All of this is stupid. Lorraine told reporters that the man asked, via an encrypted app, "I want you to make accusations of sexual misconduct and workplace harassment against Robert Mueller, and I want you to sign a sworn affidavit to that effect." So they offered her $20,000, and then Lorraine says that they also offered to pay her credit card debt, and Lorraine says that he knew exactly how much credit card debt she had. So when reporters followed up on the contact info for the man, they were told they were in over their head. There was some kind of like bad gangster movie dialogue that they were fed. And also, it's not really clear that this Lorraine character even exists in the first place, who she is, because she hasn't come forward and talked to the media beyond this.
I'd like to get to the bottom of this with a company called I'm Not an Idiot Productions and make a documentary about it.
Federal Bureau of Idiot Finders is looking into it.
Yeah, I don't know if a woman would pick Lorraine as their fake name.
I use Lorraine as my fake name,
you
but that
do?
Was not me. Yeah, because if you rearrange the letters of Erin Gloria Ryan, it spells Lorraine Graney, which I think is a hilarious.
That is a cute name. I was thinking like Lorena Bobbitt. Like if it was Lorena, I'd be like, I understand that. That has some very good historical relevance.
It's very funny that you're like, who would name themselves Lorraine? And Aaron was like, me.
Absolutely.
So one in three was like, I would totally use that fake name.
33% of women.
If there's ever an anonymous woman floating around and her name is Anastasia, it's me.
Good to know.
I like that.
That's my name of choice.
It's flightful. It has some fancy in the movie. And Mickey was dressed with the wand and the robe. Yeah,
I'm not even thinking of that one. I'm thinking of the Russian.
Yeah, the cartoon Russian that's like the knockoff Disney.
Yeah.
That had really good music
anyway. Yeah, Fox.
I also believe this might have been some actual tragic novel, maybe.
Oh, it was. Yes.
Okay. So it's about
the fall of the Russian monarchy.
Well, the Hunchback of Notre Dame, they also made into a movie, which, why did they do that?
Yeah.
An animated movie.
You can be Esmeralda. That can be your name.
You're also wearing a kind of Esmeralda
outfit. Yes, this is very Esmeralda.
This is a pirate. I'm a pirate wench. Who brought a Nixon mask.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. I am seeing it on the table now.
I'm not wearing that. Okay. So this Lorraine character that we don't know if she's real or not was not the only woman who got reached out to by this Surefire Intelligence company. Jennifer Taub, who's an associate professor at Vermont School of Law, was also approached. And she said that she received an email, didn't even respond, and immediately forwarded it to the FBI. So here's where it gets kind of wacky. So Jacob Wohl and Jack Berkman, two conservative fringe figures, I guess, started making noise earlier this week about an incoming Mueller harassment story. But Berkman said that Surefire Intelligence was actually run by Jacob Wohl. And then reporters started digging into Surefire Intelligence and found that its phone number redirected to Jacob Wohl's mom's voicemail. And that Jacob Wohl's name was all over the company's domain registration. The company was only incorporated a few weeks ago. And my second favorite thing after the mom voicemail thing, according to Vox, profiles of alleged Surefire Intelligence employees on LinkedIn were actually photos of celebrities. Not like any, like well-known celebrities, like Bar Raffaelli and Christoph Waltz were pictured as employees of Surefire Intelligence.
This man reminds me of the guy from the Tonya Harding story, who was like at his mom's house, like eating nachos throughout the movie, her former bodyguard. This is like the same level of intelligence we're dealing with, I feel like.
It's Surefire.
Surefire. God, this guy, he's 20. And he was investigated for some like stock fuckery before this. And he was well known for also kind of replying to Donald Trump's tweets that were like, Father, you are so majestic. You know, just these ridiculous, like, culty responses. And so it's like, you know, this seems like the sort of plot that he would be intellectually capable of executing. I just can't believe that he thought he could outsmart Robert Mueller. Like, imagine what it would take to believe that you could outsmart Robert Mueller.
Well, I also think it's interesting because this is what they blame liberals of like doing, mm-hmm. and it's like, oh, of course this is why they think people do this, because this is what they do. Mm-hmm. Like, no one else would actually do this.
Right. Well, it's a confessing by accusing.
Yeah.
And like that's kind of where the story gets really depressing to me, is like, it sort of reminds me of, do you remember when there was another, James O'Keefe was trying to get the Washington Post to fall for a fake Roy Moore accuser in the run-up to the Alabama mm-hmm. Senate yeah. election at the end of 2017.
And it was like, we have enough real accusers.
Yeah, right, exactly. But, you know, it kind of demonstrated how hard it is to fabricate a sexual assault allegation that actually gets published by a reputable news organization. And yet these people still think it's something you can do. You can use sexual assault as, like, a political bargaining chip, and that's what it is.
Yeah.
On the plus side, maybe if we could all just internalize the confidence of that that incompetent 20-year-old Surefire Intelligence executive, we'd all be running the world.
Yeah,
huh?
I guess maybe in the days leading up to the election, we should imagine like live your canvas with the confidence of a 20-year-old.
Oh God,
Jacob Wohl. Phone bank with the confidence of a right-wing provocateur who believes that he's got a real Mueller busting case on his hands.
I've said it before and I'll say it on record here. I think 19 and 20 year old men are the worst people on the planet.
But if you could take that confidence and put that inside yourself with all of your competence, oh my God.
I know, but I like having some amount of self-awareness. And I think they lack that.
Yeah.
And I think that's really their Achilles heel.
Yeah. Well, here we are now. Now we might get a Jacob Wohl perp walk, which would be lovely for me, especially if it comes in time for the holidays. Okay, next news story. This is really depressing. And I'm sounding very sunny, but it's because we're recording later in the day than we normally am. And I didn't literally just wake up. So there was this article in the New York Times this week about Brett Kavanaugh returning to Georgetown Prep for homecoming. And the guys there, the bros at Georgetown Prep, just hailed him as a conquering hero. He attended several events, including the weekend's first called a stag night, where he just pretended everything was fine, chatted about his new job, and relived his glory days watching the varsity football team defeat Episcopal High. Goddamn Episcopal High. Why couldn't you at least beat Georgetown Prep?
I bet Episcopal's got some skeletons, too.
I'm sure. Any kind of high with a religion attached to it has some problems. He mingled, and he replied that he's hanging in when an attendee asked him how he was doing. Hanging in. That's good that he is doing good. He was wearing the same dark suit and blue tie, it looked like, that he wore to his second Senate Judiciary hearing at one of the alumni events.
That's crazy.
That definitely made me think he needs to listen to hysteria and maybe decide to use Stitch Fix or some other such program and get a couple more outfits.
Yeah.
You're a judge, for fuck's sake.
Also, burn that suit. Yeah. Like, don't you have some bad
juju
on that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Brett?
He should at least sage it. He should sage it. Sage the suit. But he also posed for pictures with former classmates. They all lined up to take selfies with Brett Kavanaugh. The younger kids did. The recently appointed school president, the Reverend James R. Van Dyke, commented that the firestorm around the nomination had united the class of 1983 and the entire school. This is from the New York Times. Over cheers, he was quoted saying, "The loyalty that you have to each other, the way you have looked after each other, and not just in the big stories, but also a lot of the small stories." Basically, the Kavanaugh hearings was a bonding experience for the bros at Georgetown Prep. What do you make of that, Kieran?
So I remember, Larry Summers was the president of Harvard and said that women were incompetent and that they didn't belong in science because of biology. And he made all of these gaffes when he was president of the university. He was in the Clinton administration. And then he kind of had to step down from the post. And I was there when, like, the class was graduating, like that class was graduating. And there was like this, it was in the church, and it's like Larry, and everyone kind of knows that he's really fucked up, like that he's really a mess. I've said fuck a lot of times this show.
It's
wow.
Fine.
Is it okay?
It's
is
a that, podcast.
Is that allowed?
You can say it as much as you fucking want, Karen.
Oh, wow. But I remember he was up there, and I know a lot of those people thought he was an idiot, but there was like this chant, this like, everyone was like, Larry, 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 Larry. And it was like, it was so surreal, bizarre, and hilarious. And like, I think he took it seriously, but I know that it wasn't. I know that there was a twinge of irony to the whole thing. So part of me wonders, it's like, if you are 14, 13, this guy's a Supreme Court justice, you see Brett Kavanaugh. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, well, this motherfucker, yeah. I'm going to get a selfie. That doesn't excuse the adult's behavior, but.
Yeah. I mean, I can see that maybe being part of it, but also like, the way that they're talking about, oh, are you okay? Like, that he just went through something. It made me think as I was reading this, like, do men actually, do they hate us? Do they really, really hate us? Do they just not see us as people at all? Like, how many times do we have to say we're people before they stop pretending that they're just learning that information anew every single time we say it? Like, I just... And also, like, is there any hope for future generations? I don't know. Megan, did you feel bad after you read this?
Oh, I mean, yeah, you sent the link and I was like, I don't even want to click on this. Like, I knew it wasn't going to be like, shame on you. It's horrible. I do think it's good that he was seen not drinking. I think that's
hey,
if we're gonna
progress.
Take anything. It's like, okay, well, maybe he's got a sponsor now and he's working. And they were, it's... My sorority, in like all sorority photos, you were not allowed to have beer in it, like even a solo cup, because it was like, we can't encourage drinking. And I'm like, wow, we are on the same level as the Supreme Court. This is really incredible. Little Chi Omega. I had no idea. I think it's terrible. I think in response to do they hate us, I think they see us as speed bumps and hurdles that get in the way of their path to success, and they don't see their own actions as what is actually what he went through is because of something he did, not something that was put upon him. Mm-hmm. But then, it's horrifying to see that the younger generations buy into that, too. I think there's probably a lot of all-boys schools. I know my boyfriend has, like, looked into what his all-boys school is up to. And if you look at those videos, it's a Trump rally. These are very, very affluent boys, a lot of mobility in terms of what they can do, and they're in Trump hats. And that's what's, like, truly frightening, because we do keep talking about, like, we need the younger generation. And I think so many of them are on the right path. I mean, I'm watching all of Taylor Swift's Instagram stories and feeling very inspired. But there is this sort of, gosh, I would like to say subculture of wealthy white that very much buys into what happened to Brett Kavanaugh is a travesty because this is a good guy who came from a good family.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and that kind of segues nicely into what I wanted to say about Election Day. Tuesday, it's in sight. And I've been thinking, I think about 2016 a lot. I think about the weeks leading up to Election Day in 2016. And I think about how goddamn cocky I was about how Hillary was going to win. Everybody knew Hillary was going to win. It was just a matter of, like, by how much and how embarrassing was it going to be for Trump. And we were all so cocky and confident. I think we were relying on polls and information and spin that turned out not to be reliable. And I think that, you know, 2016 was a historically low turnout election. And I think if more people knew what was at stake and what could have happened, I think more people would have shown up. And moving into Tuesday, we are hearing a lot of stories about the blue wave. Like, oh, how much are Democrats going to win by? It's only, you know, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of how much. And I just think everybody needs to ignore that. Pretend like you have a crystal ball and it is the day, it is the final days before the 2016 election, and you know what could happen, because you do know what can happen. And we do know that in the recent past, like, the media has failed us, and all we can rely on is the work that we can do and the ability that we have to get out and do everything we possibly can. I also wanted to kind of talk about, you know, the last 7 days have been pretty dark. I mean, this is like a kind of evergreen statement at this point. Yeah. I feel like I could get it tattooed on the inside of my wrist and just, it would always.
It's not evergreen this week. I'm wearing a pirate costume.
That's true. It's the one bright spot in my week. But, you know, I think about the people in Pittsburgh and the Jewish community, and I think about the immigrant community, and I think about the way that this, like, vulgar and awful president has tried to use them as part of, like, a kind of gross political ploy to drum up fear and to excuse his own awful behavior. And I'm tired of seeing him do his, like, sick stand-up comedy in front of a mob of people who are deeply disturbed and hateful.
Yeah, I never get a crowd that hot.
Yeah, but one of the things that, you know,
I don't mean looks-wise.
I mean, they're beautiful.
I'm just saying, like, he's going up in front of a crowd that's like, ah! I'm like, it's not even that good at late night.
Yeah.
Tough. It's an uphill battle.
Right. He's a person who's always wanted to be funny and was never funny. Ugh. And now people think he's funny. But here's the thing. None of the things that he's doing and none of the ways that he's being disgusting can change the fact that on Tuesday we can all vote. And we have several days between now and then that we can get as many people as possible to also vote. So we'll worry about the next fresh hell when that comes along. But for now, we have to focus on Tuesday and push through the end. And that concludes my pep talk.
I know. I love the way I was like, there's a lot of gloom and doom in that pep talk.
I know.
No, that was a good halftime speech.
I think you need to be pragmatic. I think you need to be exceptionally pragmatic going into these things. You need to prepare yourself for the worst. And like, you know, Mazie Hirono, when we talked to the senator from Hawaii on this show, she said a phrase, quiet determination, which I think is really good when the other side is trying to rile us up. And the best thing we can do is just, like, put our heads down and, like, just fucking do it, because we can.
And if you are a person who gets very discouraged like I do, I would say remember that in the span since Trump has been elected, Me Too has happened. There's mm-hmm. been amazing women's rallies that have, you know, that have mobilized thousands and thousands of people across the country. And we have a ton of incredible women running in various elections mm-hmm. around the country in these midterms. So there is a mobilization, and try to put yourself on the side of that wave and that positivity going into next week and going into the polls.
Mm-hmm. And absolutely. If you're overwhelmed with the sadness, for the next few days, social media is going to be infiltrated with babies in wigs. And I think that's
yeah, it is
a
Halloween
good time,
time
out. You know, like you can be like, listen, I got a canvas. And then if you're discouraged at any point, just I saw a baby dressed up as Lieutenant Dan today.
Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm.
And it gave me a lot of joy.
Hashtag baby Halloween.
Yeah.
Hashtag baby Halloween will really save us. It's really lucky that we have our election right after Halloween because
I know. That and voting.
Yeah. that and the fact that we can vote and should. Also, dog Halloween. That's a
it's
good
great.
One, too.
Dogs in wigs.
Dogs in wigs. Cats in hats. They don't like it. I tried to put a hat on my... Never mind.
Birds in hand. I don't have any animal references. Sorry.
Well, on that note, let's go into a rapid fire kind of last gasp of some candidates that we wanted to highlight. We have been going over some women that we're excited about in different competitive races for the last several weeks, and we haven't gotten to all of them, but we're getting to another round and as many as we possibly can. So let's get started with that. I will start. Deb Haaland is a Democratic nominee in New Mexico's first congressional district. If elected, she'd be the first Native American woman to serve in Congress. She is a fighter. She was at the front lines protesting the Dakota Access Pipeline. Deb Haaland in New Mexico. So everybody in the land of enchantment, vote for Deb Haaland.
Katie Hill in California's 25th congressional district. I think this is someone in California we've been hearing a lot about. People are very, very excited.
You're canvassing for her.
I am canvassing for her on Saturday. I've done a benefit for her. I heard her speak last week. I think she's a wonderful candidate. I also, her district is typically should vote Democrat, but there's a lot of issues getting to polls, having childcare, and so that's what everybody's sort of like focusing on right now, mm-hmm. making sure the people that do want to vote can get out there. She's not taking any money from corporations or super PACs, and her team is young and good, and I feel like we all would identify with what they're trying to do mm-hmm. very much.
On the senator tip, Jackie Rosen is a Democratic congresswoman challenging Dirty Dean Heller.
Dirty Dean
in Nevada. Before running for Congress, she broke barriers in the male-dominated tech industry, working for major companies as a computer program and software developer. So that's pretty cool. Rosenfornevada.com.
And that race is really tight, too.
Yeah.
Like, she could flip it, and it's sort of, like, unexpected. Claire McCaskill, our girl Claire, incumbent Democrat in Missouri. We need her to win. It feels like the last time that she ran, it was just she won because of the Todd Aiken legitimate rape thing. Like, she has always had to battle every single time she's ran for a Senate. She was the first woman elected to represent Missouri in the U.S. Senate. We need her to win. Support her if you're in Missouri. Or visit ClaireMcCaskill.com. And we've got one more.
Oh, for governor. Also such an exciting candidate, Stacey Abrams. I hope you all have heard of her and know what's going on down in Georgia. There's an uphill battle just because they've created this shitstorm against her. But it's just really incredible to see how many people have come out in support of her and what she's doing. She's running against Brian Kemp. He sucks. He's terrible. She would become the first Black female governor in the United States, which would, I think really put a lot of money where our mouth is like, let's fuck up what's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
So Georgia, peaches, come on, please.
All right. And you can always visit VoteSaveAmerica.com if you want to learn more about what's going on in your state. Today, I'm delighted to welcome Oregon Governor Kate Brown. Governor Brown has held her office since the previous governor resigned in 2015 and won a special election in 2016. Prior to that, she was the first woman to serve as Oregon's Senate Majority Leader in 2008. Governor Brown is also the first openly LGBTQ person elected governor in the U.S. Despite being one of the most progressive governors in the country, she's currently locked in a surprisingly tight re-election bid. But I guess now the finish line's kind of in sight, huh?
Here's what's key. There is a light at the end of the tunnel. And I've been drinking copious quantities of hot chocolate this morning.
That sentence ended in a different way than I expected it to be. I've been drinking copious quantities of usually ends with something else, especially during this historical moment.
Yes.
So, Governor Brown, you're in a surprisingly close race right now with your opponent, Republican Newt Buehler.
Yes.
Unlike some of the out and proud monsters running for office under the Republican ticket elsewhere, like Ron DeSantis in Florida, Buehler kind of represents himself as more of a moderate.
should we be more wary of Republicans who claim to be moderate? And is there such thing as a moderate Republican anymore?
There are certainly such creatures as moderate Republicans. Unfortunately, my opponent is not one. I would put him in the faux moderate category, and I consider him a wolf in sheep's clothing. And I think all you have to do is look at his track record. Actions speak louder than words. He voted against legislation to ensure women would have access to reproductive health care in this state. He voted against funding for the Oregon Health Plan, guaranteeing 430,000 Oregonians would have access to health care. He's made millions of dollars from the healthcare industry, and he voted against legislation to make sure that every single child in the state would have coverage. He voted against the transportation package, telling some group of voters that it was a tax increase and then telling editorial boards that it wasn't big enough. So this guy's a wolf in sheep's clothing. I like to say our former Republican governor, who we all hold up as an icon, Tom McCall is rolling in his grave every time he hears that.
Why do you think it's so close right now?
A couple of reasons. There has been a boatload, I could use another word, of money being spent to discredit my leadership and halt our progress. So we have led this country in the last 3.5 years with the most innovative, creative public policy. Let me give you just 5 examples. Number one, my automatic voter registration legislation. Number two, our work to ensure that every single woman in the state, regardless of their income, zip code, or immigration status, has access to the full complement of reproductive health services. Number three, the nation's first coal to clean, intentionally moving Oregon away from coal-generated electricity. I will confess, while it was first, we've now been eclipsed. Number four, our Oregon Saves, allowing Oregonians to leverage professional investors to save for retirement. I think that will also be a national model. And number five, our fair scheduling legislation. So we have literally kicked ass in terms of innovative, progressive public policy.
There's a lot of wealthy interests out there that want to halt our progress. You are obviously aware that one person has spent, we think, close to $4 million to topple me. But there have been other several wealthy interests that have spent significantly. The timber industry has spent close to $1 million. They want me toppled because I work to keep public hands and public lands, and they'd rather clear cut it. So folks want to halt our progress. They don't want to see strong, frankly, feminist leadership at the state level, because it's certainly counter to what's happening in this nation's capital.
Mm-hmm. And what you're saying, the sort of initiatives that you've championed as governor, sounds like things that a lot of people nationwide would want to see in their respective states. Do you think that the interests that are trying to topple you are trying to topple you because they're worried that other people might get some ideas from what you're doing in Oregon?
Absolutely. Oregon has been a shining beacon of hope for states and, frankly, progressives across the country. They want to make sure it ends on my watch, and my job is to make sure that we keep Oregon moving forward.
So this is obviously something that voters in other states should care about, but why should they care about, and how can they help in these waning days of the campaign?
Well, I think there are a couple of reasons why progressives, frankly, folks should care across the entire country. The states are the places where the action is at. I listed our 5 innovative, groundbreaking bills, but we also have been able to make steady progress on common sense firearm safety for a Western state. That's pretty amazing. We've passed comprehensive background checks. We moved forward on legislation to implement red flag laws, allowing courts to take guns away from those who are a danger to themselves or others. But we were the first state in the country to take action after the Parkland shooting, literally to close a domestic violence loophole. So I think it's critically important that we have strong leadership at the state level, because the states are the places where we're GSDing, getting stuff done.
Oh,
and so innovative public policy, number one. Number two, making sure that we have strong leadership to stand up to the Trump administration. And frankly, number three, in terms of state executive offices, this is the pipeline to the presidency. And if we want to have creative, innovative executives, the governors are where it's happening. And so that's why I think people should care about these governors' races in terms of what people can do to help. I literally won my first race for the state house by 7 votes. I will tell you that 20 plus years later, people still say to me, they now call me governor, obviously, Governor Brown, I was your 7th vote. I was the reason that you won. So obviously voting, even if you're in Oklahoma or you're voting in Alabama or you're voting in Washington, it's critically important that you vote. In Oregon, we believe that your vote is your voice and every single voice matters. And you can always go online and send us money. That always helps.
Just to switch gears a little bit, that 7 votes thing is just incredible. That's so crazy. But I mean, it happens all the time in different races. But I wanted to switch to you using the word feminist to describe yourself.
Yeah.
The governor houses in the U.S. are very lopsidedly Republican and lopsidedly male. I think you're one of 6 female governors. When you use the word feminist to identify yourself and when you wear that label in the way that you govern, do you do that knowing that you're going to get blowback, or do you do that thinking that you're kind of leading the charge and hoping that people will follow your lead?
I think that it's about leading the charge and ensuring that we are creating progressive public policy that can be replicated in states across the country. And I'll go back to the Women's Reproductive Health Equity Act. We in Oregon had no restrictions on the access to reproductive health services, including abortion. I felt strongly, my legislative leadership felt strongly, that we needed to essentially craft an insurance policy for Oregon women and people with uteruses. And in crafting that legislation, we've created what I think will be the model for the country to ensure that women across these United States have access to the full complement of reproductive health services. So it was very much from a feminist perspective, and the work that I have been doing since I was 13 years old, making sure that women in this state have access to the health care that they need.
Mm-hmm. On the subject of reproductive rights, there's a measure on Oregon's ballot next week. That's an anti-abortion measure.
Yes.
If abortion rights can be stripped in Oregon, what does that mean for the rest of the country? Or if they can be threatened to be stripped in Oregon?
So we have one of the blessings of Oregon is that we have a very active initiative and referendum system. And it's relatively simple and relatively not very expensive to get an initiative on the ballot. I would certainly argue that this measure qualified under very questionable circumstances. But that being said, it's on the ballot. I'm confident we are going to defeat it. The ballot measure would essentially deny low-income women access to reproductive health services and prohibit public employees' insurance from covering abortions. I actually think it's the wrong way to go. I think we want to be focused on making sure that all women, all people, have access to the health care that they need. And the campaign's theme is no cuts to care. And I think we do not want to be treating women's reproductive health services as any different than any other health care service. And that's really been a challenge for this country, honestly. My experience in working in the legislature was that what insurance companies covered was what a healthy white male needed. And it took us a whole hell of a lot of work to make sure that we got permanent coverage for insurance coverage for mammograms, for gynecological exams. And it took me 16 years, hard years, to get insurance companies to cover contraceptives, mm-hmm. even though 2/3 of them covered abortion. It was sort of backwards. We want all of these reproductive health care services covered because that's what healthy women need in this country.
Mm-hmm. With less than a week away from the election and in the middle of a hard race, what is one thing you're doing besides drinking hot chocolate to distress?
Oh, I am a compulsive exerciser. So this morning I did it wasn't a really hot yoga class, but a pretty nice hot yoga class. Yesterday, I did a high-intensity interval training class and then did a 2-mile walk to cool down.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that's great. That's like the least harmful vice you could possibly have.
I think so.
Well, Governor Brown, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. And good luck next Tuesday.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate the time.
Yep,
give them hell.
You too. Bye-bye. We have to take a break, but when we come back, actor and activist Amber Heard joins us.
Hey, Crooked listeners. If you haven't become a friend of the pod yet, you are missing out on exclusive bonus content that drops every single week. If you do join, you're helping us, grow Crooked Media, which is one of the few independent, proudly pro-democracy media companies left in Trump's America. If you join, you also get ad-free episodes of all your favorite pods, ad-free episodes of Pod Save America, Love It or Leave It, Offline, Pod Save the World. You also get bonus content like our new extra episode of Pod Save America called Pod Save America Only Friends, Dan Pfeiffer's Polar Coaster. You also get access to all of our excellent Substack newsletters like Pod Save America Open Tabs and tons more great content. So stop what you're doing right now and go ahead and subscribe at crooked.com/friends. Check it out.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
And we're back. Hysteria is delighted today to welcome Amber Heard. She's an actor and activist. She is appearing in the new Aquaman film, which is released in the U.S. in December. You can also catch her in Justice League, Pineapple Express, Zombieland, and more. But she's also a domestic and sexual violence prevention activist who has spoken on behalf of the U.N. Human Rights Council in Geneva. And she was recently in her home state of Texas supporting Beto O'Rourke. Amber, welcome.
Hi. I'm so glad to be here with you.
Yeah, and also Amber's friend brought red wine.
It was actually Amber, too. It was a tandem thing, and then I really... her friend put it down on the table.
They came in, like, triumphantly raising it, like, we're drinking red wine.
Or just like, we are allowed to be here, right?
Yeah. It's noon.
Yeah, I mean, technically, we walked in 5 minutes past noon, so yeah. I feel like it's...
It's the afternoon.
Yes. It's also a holiday, so it's like, you could wake up on Halloween and drink at 8 a.m.
That's a fact.
Yeah,
totally.
I think that's fine.
You know, there is a holiday for pretty much every day of the
year. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I got wasted on National Hot Dog Day.
Yeah, yeah. do you guys want to cheers with our plastic cups of red wine?
Cheers.
Pirate Kieran.
Pirate Kieran.
Cheers.
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 Oh, it's nice.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it nice?
Oh, it's nice. Thank you.
It's kind of
thank you.
I want to dip some bread in some olive oil right now. Like, it just would go so, anyway.
It takes so little to make me so happy. I'm like,
So today on Halloween, I guess you guys are all listening to this on All Saints Day, which is, I guess if you're Catholic, it's a day your parents make you go to church and you hate it. But we're going to talk about something called safety work. Megan, you were the one who suggested we talk about this. Do you want to talk a little bit about what safety work is?
Yeah, so I first heard about this particular study on NPR that was done in the UK. I think I was initially drawn to it because the woman reporting it had such an incredible British accent. And even though she was talking about very, very serious stuff, I know on a past episode we talked about the time we spend getting ready and like sort of like the makeup and the hair and those. So this is very similar in that sense, but it deals with safety concerns and much more frightening material. So taking a different route home because you don't want to walk by a certain place, making sure your key is kind of positioned in a way in your hand so you could ram it into somebody's jugular if you need to.
Has anybody ever done that?
I don't know, but
every woman I know does.
Knows that story.
Yeah. we all carry our keys like that.
Yeah.
But like, what would, if somebody snuck up behind me, I wouldn't be like, boom. I would
My key is dull, too. Like, I think it would, like, bounce off of someone. But those type of things, I mean, I think about it in the sense of when my boyfriend and I go to bed, by the time I am climbing into bed, actually, he has been asleep for 45 minutes because I'm checking all the doors and making sure our alarm is set. I'm also doing a very intense moisturizing routine on my face. So it's kind of a twofold thing of, like, listen, I got to look good, but I also want to make sure I'm alive to see this La Mer reach its, like, proper course.
This was pretty extreme, but I used to live with a dude who wouldn't close the door. Like, he wouldn't close the door to the house, and I had to be, like, multiple times.
That's psychotic.
I had to be, like, multiple times, hey, so, like, you know, any day that's a rape-free day, I consider it to be a good day. So if we could, like, keep that track record up, it'd be super dope. That'd be really great. If you could just close the door, you know, I want to keep this day rape-free, too.
And,
you know, and he'd be like, yeah, yeah, rape-free. Got it. Yeah, yeah, got to close the door. And he just wouldn't. It's a different way to live when you have a larger body.
You didn't know this. You were doing safety work just by closing your door.
Mm-hmm.
That took time out of your day to try and educate a man that he should close a door in his home.
Mm-hmm. I mean, think about how many times. I mean, did you live on the first floor?
Yeah, it's both floors.
Like, that was a whole conversation when I first moved to, like, a city. It was like, oh no, you can't live on the first or second floor of any place. Are you crazy? Like, you're moving by yourself? What are you doing? And I was like, oh yeah, duh, of course. And I remember, you know, I was saying to my friend the other day, she was like, oh, you know, I got this new place. And I was like, is it on the first floor? It's like the first question I asked her. I mean, she's a 40-year-old woman who's lived a lot of life. Like, why is this even a topic of conversation when we're talking about real estate?
Yeah, and I also think a lot about, like, you know, the things that we do that are safety work sometimes are just things that we do to self-soothe. Because it's not like if there's a rapist in your neighborhood, he's not just going door to door being like, woohoo, this one open?
Mm-hmm.
Nope, okay, moving on to the next one until he finds an open one. Although I did read a story once about a serial killer that did that. But otherwise...
He would have had a lot of luck in Canada.
Yeah, he would have done great in Canada. But that's the thing. Like, sometimes we do things like we carry our keys in between our fingers, even though if we really got attacked, like, I'm not a trained fighter. I would just yell. Literally, the noise I made during the last episode of The Haunting of Hill House during a jump scare. I would make that noise and then I wouldn't fight with my keys. You know, I don't have a fight reflex. I have a flight reflex. And then, you know, also if somebody wants to break into your house, like, you locking the door isn't going to stop them from getting in. You know what I mean? And, like, if somebody wants to, and I sometimes think that safety work contributes to a tendency that people have to victim blame. Not saying that it always does, but you think that, you know, things that happen to people happen to those people because they didn't do something or because they were walking the wrong way. And when in reality, sometimes bad things just happen.
Yeah. A lot of these are, like, much bigger, too. So not just keys and doors, but, like, deciding to move out of a particular city because instances of violence against women are on the rise, or choosing neighborhoods based on that. When I was in New York, I had friends that lived in, guy friends who lived in neighborhoods that they were like, well, oh, the place down the street opened up. And I'm like, I can't live there. Like, it's not safe for me to walk from the train to there. And so I would be spending more money to live in a place that felt safer to me. And then I would always be like, well, if I had moved to that place where I felt less safe or more susceptible to violence against a woman walking alone at night, I would have had to take cars. Yeah. And so I would justify, like, the uptick in my rent of, like, I would have been taking a car, but then if I get into a car with a man who I don't know at night, I know that doesn't have great results. I've also seen the bone collector. So there's, like, all of these things of, like, you're kind of damned if you do, but people leave jobs sometimes and then have to take a lower salary because their boss was harassing them. I mean, that's a form of safety work as well.
I think it's interesting because, what you're saying is essentially we're always constantly running this equation that in the back of our head as women, the reward to cost ratio. And that balance is what it's a process we're running in the background at all times. Like, okay, like I don't want to wear, you know, I don't really feel like wearing a turtleneck today. I'd actually kind of just like to just, like, you know, walk around without my bra, frankly. I can because I'm so, you know, blessed.
Congratulations.
Yeah, right? But, you know, like, I mean, it's something as simple as that. You know, like, I don't want to, right? But I'm making all these decisions actively, knowing because I have to go in public. So that's just, you know, I have to get through life. And the reward of feeling like I can actually exhale fully without being without having this, like, rubber band around my rib cage for no reason other than to mitigate some of the attention that would, you know, befall me otherwise.
Which and might be unwanted. It's like you're just trying to live your life. So it would change the way that you dress or the change. You before you leave your house, you're making a mental calculus of, like, do I want a certain amount of attention?
Well, I think we're always doing that, not even just with attention to our bodies. Women are constantly running the occasion where, like, from a very early age, I think all of us, in my opinion, all of us learn very early on that we're an implicit apology will be expected of us for the way that our appearance affects others.
Yeah, that we're sort of the cultivators of the mood around us at all times. We're like, I made
a great
joke with a friend. It's like, we're the host of every social interaction. We're the ones responsible for how it goes. So we come in being like, well, the theme is I'm not wearing a bra.
Yeah.
Like, coming in, the theme is I put on lipstick today, so you treat me this way. The theme is that I'm wearing running clothes, and so you know, think I look disgusting or whatever. And I think that that's something really interesting, too, because it's not just safety, when, like, life or death safety. It's like social safety and social comfort of on your end. And I think a lot about the way that, you know, if we somehow dress in a way that men or people on the outside, but usually men, if they think it is giving them a certain signal and they respond to that signal and we don't want to be a part of it, then they're like mad at us, which is something that's always been fucking crazy to me.
It kind of belittles men too. Like, yeah, I'm like, who are these guys, like, that feel good about being like, you know, I don't know if this is still, I remember one of the rules in some, you know, more conservative countries in the Middle East, they base the woman's dress code on, you know, little things like, you know, shoes that couldn't make noise, and, you know, because it would, you know, invoke the image of a woman's legs walking, and, like, all these kind of things that felt really, like, babying to men. I remember, like, I was like, God, that kind of is insulting. If I was a dude in this situation, I'd be like, really? Fuck you. I mean, I think I can
hear a clog.
Yeah.
Without getting a boner.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sort of the detergent dad phenomenon, too, where it's like, well, I can't do it. You guys got to take care of it for me. Where it's like, okay, guys, if you're in charge of, like, most Fortune 500 companies and most governments, and you've always been the president, yet you can't handle a woman walking around without a bra on, should you be in charge? Like, or are you just pretending that you can't handle it yourself when a woman is walking around without a bra on?
There's a term for that. There's, and I can't remember the name of it, but it's almost like a selective incompetence, where it's like, I can run a company, I can do this, and then it's like, whoops, I messed up, or I can't do the dishes, or well, you weren't wearing a bra, so I had to put my dick in your butt. You know,
that's
like,
excuse.
Yeah, yeah.
What?
It's like, yeah, that's what the people say. That was a direct quote from the people.
That escalated.
Aaron, it's what the people say.
That escalated.
So quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, the butt was definitely an aggressive choice.
Yeah. Well, it's a direct quote from my imagination. So,
this is interesting and sad. There was research done by, I believe this is a gentleman, Jackson Katz, and he asked the question, how do you avoid being sexually assaulted on a daily basis? Men's only answer was, nothing, I don't think about it. And women had over 30 ways they answered. And I think that is truly breaks it down perfectly. It's just, we have over 30 different things that we're thinking about, and they're thinking about nothing, which does allow them to be like, oh, I'm going to try and run this company, because they're not factoring in any of these other things.
Going back to something Amber said earlier, she said that it's a program that's always running. It's like if you have a program on your computer that's always taking up 20% of the RAM, like, you can't go through life as a full human being if you're constantly like, oh, am I, you know, should I get a big dog? Or, like, should I think about getting a gun? Should I do a, like, Jennifer Lopez in Enough montage situation where I'm practicing firing or whatever? But that takes away from our ability to live life as, like, fully realized people, I think.
And that's, I'm not, that's just physical. You know, we're just breaking it down to one category of violence against women. That's physical. We're not even talking about the social economics, the time equity, the sweat equity that we're also putting into running these, you know, programs instead of living in that neighborhood that's actually closer to work and makes more sense for our lives, or, you know, using that little bit of extra money that we're spending on taking a cab instead of, or, you know, in taking, you know, an Uber instead of a cab, whatever, or, you know, and actually not Uber, but, you know, it's like.
I mean, right. Every single time there's a new solution, it's a new set of problems, basically. That's something, too. It's like we do these things to try to avoid being sexually assaulted, which avoid sexual assault from somebody that you don't know. You know? And like, Amber, I'm sure you've dealt with this in your work, but, you know, most of the time that women find themselves a victims of, you know, sexual violence, it's at the hands of somebody that they know.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, the majority of victims of female homicide, well over half, happen at the hands of an intimate partner, their boyfriend or husband. I think we're breaking this down and we're talking about all these measures that we can take to protect ourselves from, you know, even if we implemented all of these things and we just always chose the safest neighborhood, went out in packs, had a curfew. I mean, when was the last time you just ran at night? Mm-hmm. You know, if we did everything, you know, had beepers and rape whistles and everything, it would only protect us against the violence that befell us from strangers.
Yeah,
not
from outside.
But
but
statistically, you know who hurts us the most? The men we know.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
That's the thing. Men, and I, you know, no man. Like you take a woman and a man, the strength disparity. I don't care what kind of training you have. I don't care what, you know, like martial arts movie you've programmed into your head. I don't care. The disparity between physical strength is unlike, they're not comparable. Case in point is, like, have you ever tried to push a man? You can't push him over. But men push a woman, she falls like a toddler.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just the physical strength disparity. You mentioned that earlier, I think. And it's just not fair.
But I remember one time I was dating someone and I was like, oh, let's arm wrestle. Like, just as a joke. Do you know what I mean? And he was like, yeah. So he goes, you know, I'm going to beat you, like, by a lot. And I was like, yeah, let's just do it. But it was so, because I think we all live in our own experience, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, in my mind, I tower like a colossus over the world. I feel very big. You know, I feel like a big, I feel like a big person. I feel like, and then I'll see
a big bitch.
I feel like a big
badass bitch.
I feel like a big bitch. And then when I see myself next to other people, I'm like, oh my, I'm like so physically small.
Yeah.
In comparison to a guy who's 6'2" or 6 feet. I'm a small person. So if somebody decides to get physical with you, it's incredibly scary. Like, and B, it's just like, if you freeze, but also just if you're not a trained black belt or martial artist or whatever, if you're not like really like this is a thing that you do physically, it's so scary because there is such a discrepancy in just pure size. Mm-hmm. And I am always curious about when you deal with like all of that shit that you're talking about, the idea of safety work, Megan, and all of the things that everyone here is talking about. And then you're also supposed to be vulnerable and open in your personal life and in your relationships. It's like, how do, like, in terms of living like a full person,
right?
You know, how do you negotiate those two things together?
Right. Yeah. How do you go from being like a battle axe to like a human being?
That's correct.
And like, it's really hard to go through the world trying to have those defenses up. I think it's even harder when you consider that, you know, like Amber was mentioning, that most violence against women happens at the hands of people that they know, of intimate partners. So you have to balance that, the fact that they're probably bigger than you, and then also that you have feelings for them. And like, so that becomes a whole different thing too. The type of safety work that we do defends us against the like anonymous, horrifying, like horror story violence. But like the insidious, everyday sort of thing, like we don't really get trained on how to deal with that. You know, nobody sits you down and says like, this is the safety work you do to protect yourself.
Right.
From your shithead guy friend who, like, every time girls get drunk, like, he tries to corral the drunkest one. Or, like, from this shithead boyfriend who, like, does this to you. Like, we don't get trained on how to handle that, which is so fucked up.
Well, and a lot of times there are, you know, I've had friends, so in my own personal experiences, when I have friends who are like in abusive relationships, their mothers were in abusive relationships. So the relationships they grew up seeing between men and women were dysfunctional. And so it's very hard to recognize it within your own life when you're being gaslit, and you're almost trained to put up with their bullshit because you've been seeing other women in your life that you very much look up to put up with that bullshit.
The mm-hmm. women are master endurers. Like, that's what we're good at. Like, mm. I think also because it's that reward to cost benefit ratio we're constantly running. Like, you're running a family, you're making, you know, up until recently even less, but what, 80 cents to the dollar, 70 cents to the dollar if you're a white woman, you know, that you're trying to maintain a job, be competitive in a job market that already sees you every single year you get older, and especially after a child, less valuable. You're trying to maintain that job while earning less, while running a family, while also keeping a number, you know, numeral other aspects of your life open and going.
And a tab on your safety. Yeah.
And then you are also doing all this safety work for free. Just at the cool cost of, or the cool benefit of not being raped that day.
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe punched that day. You know, like, and you're doing a lot of that work. It's just really exhausting. So imagine at some point you can understand why our mothers and our mothers' mothers, you know, had to just keep some things, you know, they had to endure some things and get through and push through because there was just so much other life. And I still think that's the case. And so often we're like, well, it's not mm-hmm. worth me losing my social capital, my job, my relationship.
Marital status.
Yeah.
A lot of times my economic dependency, yeah. like my economic mm-hmm. Dependency, my family, all the power balances that we have to mitigate, you know, against our own basic safety will often make women, not often, almost always make women choose to quietly endure or at the risk of their own safety or make these kind of compromises in exchange for getting on with life and being mm-hmm. able to survive it. And until we challenge all those other aspects, we are not giving women a fair, we have to recognize how unfair the opportunity is for women mm-hmm. to stand up for themselves. Even if we were physically, and I'm not just talking about physically, in terms of strength and size, even if we were equal, which we are not.
We're all a colossus. Like, Kieran is delusionally like in her mind.
We're all a Kieran-sized big bitch.
Yeah.
That's correct.
I think, you know, one thing that stuck out to me that you said, Amber, was like the quiet part of the endurance is mm-hmm. I think that the solution to this is not being quiet anymore. And there are safer places to be quiet, going back to the whole safety thing. There's safe places to be quiet, to not be quiet, and then there are places that are less safe. It feels like talking to other women is a safe place to start if you're deciding to not be quiet anymore. Because one thing that I will say about this political era that we're in is that I feel like women are now, we have each other's backs in a way that we never really have before. And I think that if, you know, one thing that's really important is that we establish open communication between our female friends, our female family members, and establish a non-judgmental channel of communication between us and our female friends and family members and male allies who can be cool and listen and not talk over us or tell us that we're wrong when we're going through something. So that seems to be the solution to me.
For all of the shittiness that specifically the Kavanaugh situation brought, I ended up reconnecting with my former sister-in-law because I had not spoken to her since my brother and her had a divorce. And I was like, I don't know why I've shut down this relationship that did mean something to me. And she was a valuable like female voice in my life, and I like reached out to her the day of the hearings and was like, I'm thinking of you, and you know, and she immediately texted back and was like, hearing from you brought tears to my eyes. Mm-hmm. And it was like they've pushed us and they've told us that like it doesn't matter what you say, but we are silently and in some ways loudly forming an army of people that we used to even be enemies with to be like, we are all united in the fact that we are women and we have had shared experiences at the hands of your bullshit.
And understanding that collective, like that people in endurance, I think sometimes that happens silently. People are enduring the shame or like, what did I do to deserve this, is an internal monologue that so many people go through. Like in my family, culturally, there's like been a ton of domestic violence and just for a ton of my mother's sisters. Do you know what I mean? And just the way that Indian culture treats that. And that's not across the board. But in my family, it was, there's just such a shame, mm-hmm. That's kind of perpetuated. And so it's like people shut down. They don't talk about it. And then when people do start talking, you realize, oh, like this person's had similar experiences, mm-hmm. or this person can relate to this aspect of this thing, or this person. And there's actually this whole, like, and that's what Me Too is to me. It's like this collective that's been bubbling under the mm-hmm. surface for years. It's not that the circumstances have changed. It's that people are communicating with one another mm-hmm. and speaking out as a collective together.
It's totally. Just amplified. It's contributed to the tidal wave, the tide of indignation towards harassment and violence against women of all kinds.
100%.
The our voices all wing in together, and having a platform where it resonates has really been, it's been really moving and important and inspiring and galvanizing, I think, for so many women, because up until very recently, you would have to make all of these terrible trades. You'd have to, forfeit or risk job, family, economic stability, you name it, to stand up for yourself. And mm-hmm. now that there's a collective conversation going, you can see how it's kind of changing the tone of the way that we start to understand and address violence toward mm-hmm. gender-based violence. Mm-hmm. We've gone from like blaming the victims to shaming predators, or at least attempting to, mm-hmm. Depending on how powerful they are, from dismissing women's accounts to believing them, you know, and that's mm-hmm. really inspiring. I mean, because that's I've noticed just in the last few years how much that has changed. And I think it's really about social media and connectedness and a few external aggravating external factors, like that shit show we all watched happen unfold before our eyes in the form of a Supreme Court nomination,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. or grab them by the pussy, and then women's. I really do believe that that's a bit, women's marches as a result of Trump. It's just like people are like, oh, we're not gonna. This fucking sucks.
Yeah. We have to take a break, but before we go, I just want to point out that just because October was Domestic Violence Awareness Month, that doesn't mean that you need to not be aware of it for the rest of the year. We will link in the show notes to some organizations if you're interested in learning more or contributing to help domestic violence survivors. We'll have those in the show notes for you again, but we'll be right back with more Hysteria.
Hey, Crooked listeners. If you haven't become a friend of the pod yet, you are missing out on exclusive bonus content that drops every single week. If you do join, you're helping us, grow Crooked Media, which is one of the few independent, proudly pro-democracy media companies left in Trump's America. If you join, you also get ad-free episodes of all your favorite pods, ad-free episodes of Pod Save America, Love It or Leave It, Offline, Pod Save the World. You also get bonus content like our new extra episode of Pod Save America called Pod Save America Only Friends, Dan Pfeiffer's Polar Coaster. You also get access to all of our excellent Substack newsletters like Pod Save America Open Tabs and tons more great content. So stop what you're doing right now and go ahead and subscribe at crooked.com/friends. Check it out.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/Ohio's time.
Hysteria is brought to you by Farmer Girl Flowers. Wow, guys, I'm feeling seen.
I am a little bit too.
I grew up on a small hobby farm, so I'm feeling seen by this flower company. So anyway, 80% of the flowers are ordered by women for other women. Wait, what?
I believe that. I send a lot of flowers.
Farm Girl Flowers is the only large-scale e-com flower delivery service that is 100% women-owned and 70% female-run. That's cool.
Super.
Shop flowers designed by women for the women in your life with Farm Girl Flowers. There's no faster way to go from needing to buy a gift to nailing a gift than going to Farm Girl Flowers. My mom sends me flowers every year for my birthday, and this year the card she sent on it said, "Another birthday." Anyway, if you're my mom, go to farmgirlflowers.com and enter the promo code Hysteria at checkout to receive a 10% off your purchase. Don't forget to follow Farm Girl Flowers on Instagram and Facebook to get beautiful flowers delivered in your feed too. And we're back. This is the part of the show where we take adamant stances that matter not at all. The hills will die on this week. Megan, do you want to go first?
I will. This is a... You'll see. So if you're listening to this podcast on Thursday, the day it comes out, as the Lord intended,
exactly.
You have time to participate in Steal a Base, Steal a Taco. Now, listen, you don't have to steal a base. The base was already stolen by Mookie Betts of the Red Sox. You can go to Taco Bell, no matter where you live, during 2 to 6 p.m. and get a free Doritos Locos Taco. Now, the hill I will die on is that free food is the greatest joy in life. It brings me... I've already had a pumpkin cookie I didn't pay for today, Cheez-Its, and spicy pistachio nuts provided by the dear people of Crooked Media. And tomorrow, Taco Bell will be giving out free tacos because a man ran really, really fast and stole a base. I think it's beautiful.
Okay. Opposite, first of all. I think that free food requires you to stand in line for a time that makes that takes more. It takes more of my time than the value of the food.
Happy to
You know
do
what
it.
I mean? Like, I am.
Me too. I'm like, free.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
What about,
free.
Like, Costco samples?
No, I don't.
What?
No, I mean,
honestly, my parents.
Classy.
My parents
too classy
had
for Costco
a
samples.
Hepatitis C scare because they got us.
I was not expecting.
They got a sample. I will not name the business, but they took a sample from a business, and then it was listed in the local paper that if you took a sample on this day during those hours, you may have been exposed to hepatitis C. So my parents had to go to the like Board of Health and get tested. They do not have hepatitis C, and they are so loyal and proud that they still get free samples even after that hepatitis C scare.
Did they have to pay for the hepatitis C test?
No, the state of Indiana footed that bill. Thank you very much.
Okay. Kieran, what hill do you want to die
That's
on this
a,
week?
I mean, I don't know if I can beat that hill, man. It's I'm big on I the hill I'll die on is this might be a little controversial, especially since I came in the outfit. But
I'm bracing myself for.
Yeah. Just hold on to the table. Look, I can get behind a holiday, but the idea of the decorations in a place with no weather is so dumb. It's so dumb. I mean, it's sunny, and then you want to put jack-o'-lanterns and drink apple cider that's warm? You know, like, what are you doing? You want to put up a Christmas tree? You want to put up a Christmas? There's no snow. There's no, the lights, the twinkle. I don't get it.
But this is how we know that it's that season.
I know, and it's so, and it just doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make any sense.
I have a Google projector at my, directed on my garage right now. I mean, my house is decorated like the Addams family lives there.
And
I didn't do it. My boyfriend did it. But don't you think that that helps be like, oh, it's Halloween, even though it's 85.
But it's like the I don't know. It just makes me feel like there's this false passage of time. And I understand.
But
those...
time is actually passing, Karen. That's the thing. Like, we
no,
don't
know.
We don't
no, Aaron. Like, I disagree with that. Time like is a construct.
It's not like an airplane that never lands and then it's never the next day.
But construct
like...
or passing in reality is still you are spending it in a pirate outfit.
That's right correct. That's correct. I will be in this for the rest of the year because time is a construct.
Haven't you ever seen like a Santa ornament and he has a surfboard?
I hate that.
That is a hoot. Santa, you got a job to do and it's not on vacation.
So I might
this
upset.
This is the one year. Day of the year.
I'm clearly upsetting a lot of people even here. And I will say it's a very accepting group of hills. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's true. Okay, so my hill that I'll die on this week is that you should end every shower by turning the hot water totally off and standing in the freezing cold for 30 seconds. That's my hill. After you do that, you can just tackle the day.
Why?
And you do this every shower.
I do this almost every shower, yeah.
Why? Who hurt you?
Mostly
that's
myself.
Next week. It was mostly,
who hurt you is a title. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's just like very, if you ever go to like a Korean spa, how you go into like a sauna and then you go like dump the like freezing cold water on you. It's like that, but in your own shower.
Okay.
I will die on this.
Yeah.
I will die of hypothermia on this hill. Okay, Amber, what's your hill?
Well, this is, I'm a little nervous considering this crowd and all crowds, frankly. Okay, I'm not proud of this, but honest, safe space, right?
Yes, safe, yes. Okay. Yeah.
I don't like Joni Mitchell's music.
Oh, wow.
And it's cost me friendships.
Yeah, you're going to have to turn your mentions off for this.
You looked back at your friend and she was like, go for it.
She was like, don't do it. She's still questioning whether she wants to be my friend or not.
Oh, man.
I like everything about uh-huh. like lyrics, everything. I think it's pitch resonance thing. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
I know.
Not liking Joan Didion. Honestly.
I'm not that bad. Yeah.
Okay, well, those are the hills we're going to die on this week. Amber, thank you so much for coming by. Thanks to Governor Kate Brown of Oregon. Thanks to Megan and Kieran for being perfect angels as every week. And we'll be back with more Hysteria next week. I am from another planet. This nation is like Janet. But these girls gotta fan it. 2K email and scan it. Don't take no for an answer. Girl with a mouth that's overdone. Right, cause girls just wanna have fun. So Annie, get your gun. Give them what they want. It will never be enough. You can take what you want from me. Yeah, I'll say it loud. And we're gonna shut it down. All the girls to the front with me. Girls to the front.
Hey, Crooked listeners, if you haven't become a friend of the pod yet, you are missing out on exclusive bonus content that drops every single week. If you do join, you're helping us, grow Crooked Media, which is one of the few independent, proudly pro-democracy media companies left in Trump's America. If you join, you also get ad-free episodes of all your favorite pods, ad-free episodes of Pod Save America, Love It or Leave It, Offline, Pod Save the World. You also get bonus content like our new extra episode of Pod Save America called Pod Save America Only Friends, Dan Pfeiffer's Polar Coaster. You also get access to all of our excellent Substack newsletters like Pod Save America Open Tabs and tons more great content. So stop what you're doing right now and go ahead and subscribe at crooked.com/friends. Check it out.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.